Hello, I'm Raimi.
And I'm Beth.
And this is Brother Knows Quest, the podcast where I, your host, introduce my sister to the wonderful world of tabletop role-playing games. Again, I should say that this isn't a review, it's more of a discussion of a game I haven't got to play, but I really do like the subject of it, or the setting. I don't think you will. I guess you don't know what it is, do you, Beth?
No.
Okay, this is what it is. It's also sticking with our theme of books that work with the 5e rules.
Stargate. Like Stargate Atlantis?
And SG-1, yeah, they're the same thing.
Oh, okay, it wasn't a bad show.
No, I liked it. Our friend Brett introduced me to Stargate. I didn't never know I liked it until then.
No, that one wasn't bad.
No, it wasn't.
I didn't watch all of them, but...
I did.
I did watch some that you watched.
Yeah, they're still
as good. You were playing them?
They're on Amazon now. A lot of places, actually, I do believe. But this is it's obviously licensed MGM, and it's powered by 5e. It's Waverin Gaming done it, or created it. And in this, you have 5 races, 6 classes, multiple origins to choose from, classes that level up to 5, but by that point, you're very powerful, especially in the Stargate universe. Of course, like I said, it uses the 5th edition D20 rule set, and it has a focus on non-combat, but also has combat, because as an SG-1 team, you are going to encounter that. And it catches up on the state of the universe that since the show has been off air.
Well,
it's a sci-fi game. I don't know if I should say that. Anybody who's listening to this probably knows that. You are a member of a team who have been sent to an off-world command site, a new one that has been founded, for the sole purpose of alien outreach. And, you know, as part of Stargate Command on Earth, they don't really get like a lot of aliens coming and going, but this site is perfect for that. So it's more relationship building for that. How many pages are in it?
There are 353, okay. Not counting like index.
Yeah, I'd say a lot of that's backers and stuff like that. I'm not sure if it was backed. I think it was. I don't remember where I bought it from. Again, I'm pretty sure you'll be able to find it wherever you want to. Just Google it. But I'll look and see if there's like one of our things for it. Yeah, you have 13 chapters, introduction, character creation, races, origins, classes, equipment, feats. Yes, the game has feats.
I like this paper.
I do too. using ability scores, missions, encounters, program brief, the game master, and then life forms. It has changed a little bit. You use meters. It has changed some from the 5th edition rules. You use meters instead of the standard imperial measurements. There's firearms, of course. It's sci-fi instead of fantasy. There's a tension die, rolling a 1d4 comedic to a 1d12 to all is lost. This die sets the tone of the episode and the scene that you're about to play. Damage isn't normally lethal. It's considered more of a stun kind of thing. There's different types of encounters from the standard one. Determination points. Characters have a number of determination points that act as a wagering resource during certain encounter types. You have initiative and moxie, dex or wisdom, instead of just dex to roll your position in combat or your time, your turn. And then they've added moxie, using intelligence or charisma for use in non-action encounters. Then you have mission points. Experience points. Mission points are how characters earn advancement. How you do better as a character and get better. You start off by choosing your race, and it's take, you know, note of its abilities. Then you choose 2 origins, but they can't be from the same section. You have generic biomes, background, and racial origins. You have to choose 2 from separate one of those options. There's a whole bunch of those. Then choose your class, choose your ability scores, make a description for your character, and then calculate your other attributes from there. But there is a new race added to the SG universe. It is the Aturen, A-T-U-R-E-N, I think is how you pronounce that. They look elf-like, and their civilization is built around houses, so you're a member of this house or that house. They used to kind of bicker amongst each other in war until another one of the great races from the SG-1 universe called the Nox. They're more like the hippie race. They like to stay hidden, and they're very advanced and somewhat psychic in a way.
Hmm.
But the Nox shown themselves to these people, stopped their bickering, and now most of them's taken after the Nox and become more in tune with nature and less warlike, and you could be one of them, which is pretty cool. They have a few traits, natural resistances against disease or poison. You could choose wisdom or charisma as your ability score improvement. Proficiencies, choose any two of those. You're a naturalist. Science check involving an ecosystem or a creature. You add you add plus TD to your check. Then you have the pacifist, Noxian pacifist traits you could have, which only get you 8 additional hit points instead of the 10 the other one had. Charisma and constitution increased by 2, or charisma increased by 2. And then you can choose invisibility. You're not as invisible as the Nox can be, but you're still learning from them. And you're, of course, you're a pacifist. You're unwilling to harm people. It's part of your option there. Then you have the humans, you know what humans are. You could be from Abydos, which was run by Gwold, which is a parasitic race that pretend to be gods inside of humans and basically control everything. They like to travel around on giant pyramids. You have the human traits, you have the Abydudian traits, and then you have the Tolian traits. Tolians are more advanced. They are stronger than the ancient Gwold parasitic race, and they tend to keep them safe. Well, they did for a time, anyway. It didn't go so well in the long run in the series. Spoiler. The Abydonians, they have recovery. You can regain extra HP during your short rest. And then you're free from Ra, which was a big deal for them in the series. That Ra was their Gwold master. And then the Tolian, Tolan, I don't know why I keep saying Tolian. Tolan traits are they can phase shift. You had a phase device to your base kit. You could shift through walls, which is one of their advanced technologies they had. And you're more attuned to advanced technologies. Then you have the Jaffa race, which are the militaristic slave race for the Gwold. They have one of those baby parasites, but it stays in their stomach instead of in their neck and brain. And eventually it grows, and they can put it in some person to become a Gwold. And then they get a new baby one to keep them alive. It gives them extra long life, better healing, but they're also reliant on the Gwold, and they serve them. That's just what their job is. A lot of them have turned against them since the humans have shown up. It's a very Egyptian theme. Some of the Gwold lords are themed after Chinese or other things. But if you get into the Norse mythology, usually that's another one of the advanced races called the Asgard. They're friends of the Nox. And if you get into the... I think some of the Christian ones also are part of an ancient race of human-like creatures, named as the Ancients, obviously. They were more related to us than the other races. The Jaffa's rates, though, they have the symbiote, the thing I was talking about in their stomach. They can meditate instead of sleep. And then, free Jaffa, which means you're relying on teratonin, which replaces the chemical that the symbiote does to keep them alive. If you want to be free from the Gwold completely, you can take the little symbiote out, start giving yourself injection of this stuff, and you have the same useful healing factor and all that, but you are pretty much addicted to a drug instead of a little bug in your belly. And of course, you have the same resistance trait. And then you have Tok'ra, which are literally Gwold, but have been, they decided that it's best to live in peace, at peace with the human that they've inhabited. So they're a full-grown Gwold symbiote, symbiote inside of them. And occasionally one will take over for the other. It does give them thousands of years worth of life, as long as they share their body with this Gwold. And they do what they can. They infiltrate the bad Gwold and take them down from the inside. Their particular good traits are the synergetic symbiote, which means you have the symbiote inside of you, of course. You gain advantage on intelligence, willpower, charisma, saves. And they can use that once per wisdom modifier, or as many times as they have as number of wisdom modifier they have. Then you get the regeneration. They are greatly, they are kept alive by their symbiote. Like, they get terrible injuries and still survive, which is fine, if as long as you don't mind sharing your body. And then you have another version of them called the Paragon, which are shrewd diplomats, and they also get the regeneration. And then you have the Unas, which is a race that grew up on the same planet as the symbiotes did, and it was their original host bodies. So, but they're more primitive. They're bestial in nature, but you can play as one of those if you want. They look primitive in their appearance. They are, I don't know how to explain them. All these races I've been talking about look pretty much human, except for the first one. They have pointy ears like elves. But this one looks like a type dinosaur almost. It's a human shape. It's got bipedal, you know, two arms, two legs. But it's got more horns on its head and sharp teeth. And its beard is pretty much made of horns. It's kind of creepy. Yeah. But they grew up on the same planet as the ghoul did, like I said. They have 14 additional hit points. Most of the other ones we've seen has been 10 to 8. They are robust. They get +4 to their strength. Impressive resilience. They are resilient. Not as resilient as a gold would be, but resilient. They have claws instead of normal hands. And then you can have the unchained, or Unus, which means they have not been enslaved. Because a lot of these, a lot of them have been taken off their world and enslaved. Not by gold so much as the humans that are free of the gold. They just figured they're a good servant. And of course, some of them have lore that tells them that these creatures used to enslave them back when they had gold in them. So of course they want to re-enslave them, not knowing that they're just not the same thing anymore. They're not controlled by gold. They're also got claws, resilience, but they're also underestimated. People just don't expect they're capable of much. And that's the races you could pick. Most people will play as a human. They should be at least two humans in the group. It makes the game better. But some of the biome origins you could choose from is like arboreal, artificial, like from an artificial, like you're on Mars in a, well, not necessarily, but a planet that had been colonized kind of like Mars with its own little biome that someone, biodome kind of thing where you live inside that to keep you safe from the environment outside. You have volcanic, urban, swamp, terraformed, tundra. There's tons of these. Then you have background origins such as aviator, enslaved, former host of a gold, a freedom fighter, an entertainer. That would be a wild one to be running around a space military with. Then you have military background, of course. Herdsman, politician. Racial origins include a Tok'ra spy, Unus Alpha, so you was an alpha of one of these clans. Student of Braytek, which is a very popular Jaffa. He is also one of the main characters in issue 1. Teal'c, it's his master as well. It could be a Jaffa renegade, a Tauri military, which a member of the human military. You could be a teacher, a sentry, a sleuth, student. And your classes are diplomat, making peaceful contact with other civilizations, engineers, maintaining the wide range of technology, medic, which is perfect for those elf-like Noxan friends I mentioned earlier. They're obviously meant to keep people alive. The scientist investigates mysteries in the new world. The scout, which is great for the Unus, keeps the team safe in the wilderness. Then you have the soldier, perfect for Jaffa. It's tasked with keeping the team alive when danger looms. And then you have certain feats to add to your character. I'm not going to go over all those. There's things like Vanguard. You deal +1d6 additional damage with attack against any target within 5 meters. You have a sniper, trick shot. You have spraying fire, uncanny shot, sniper techniques, rapid fire, army hound, which is cool. A gamer, athlete, bookworm, party animal, a bookworm. That's like Daniel Jackson from the series. He was a bookworm, but it got him far in the series. Yeah. He became friends with so many people. He was also kind of a diplomat. Discovery feats include archaeologist, astronomer, biologist, social science. Procedure feats. Now, that would be an interesting one. He could be an urgent care can take urgent care. When you heal with a med kit, you may choose to replace the healing dice rolled with the same number of tension dice. So that would help you out. Improved medicine, things like that. And then, of course, you have the... I'm not going to go over the standard rules, because if you know 5e rules, you know these. They just change some of the flavor text, add a couple extra dice in sometimes. It helps you out. Then you have cool creatures that you get from the series, like the replicators. But since this is SG1 and not necessarily Atlantis, you don't see some of the things. There's also not a huge emphasis on ship combat, which was fairly important in the later part of the series. But that's fine, because you're an SG1 member, team member, not necessarily a captain of a ship. You have the replicators in here, all different forms of replicators. You have all the equipment that you can imagine, like as Nakoda generators, nuke, all kinds of cool things that you've seen in the series. Some new ones, of course. You have different types of gold in the creature index. You have all kinds of different humans. You have scientists and standard things you would see in normal world of our world right here. You would find all sorts of stuff in there. I went through it and found all kinds of cool things. There's some pictures of some of them. I got to hand it. The replicators are one of my favorite monsters in the SG universe. Created by the ancients. Our progenitors. I think that's the word for it. And they are just little nano machines that grow and grow and create their own life forms. And usually they'll ignore organic life unless it gets in their way. But if you're an advanced ship flying out in space and a replicator ship finds you, they're going to try and eat it around you and turn it into more of them.
Mm-hmm.
There are problems. There's just lots of cool things. There's some nasty things. There's some sentient plants, sentient crystals. A lot of things have a mind of their own you don't expect to. It's just nice. It's fun. Would you ever play something like this? Just out of curiosity?
I mean, yeah, I would give it a chance.
Now, I will say late in this whole story that if you don't know anything about SG-1, space travel in this series, the ancients, that race I was talking about on and off, that are pretty much humans but more advanced, they created a device known as a Stargate. They plop one on a planet or right in orbit of a planet or whatever, and it connects to another Stargate on another planet, and you instantaneously travel from one planet to another. Which is why, as the Tauri, we don't need spaceships as much. That's why we have SG teams. We just kind of send them through the gate to another planet we find, dial it in, and explore. And later on in the series, you get ships, of course. And the Gould have a lot of ships because they use them to enforce their will on other planets. But it's crazy how much they can do with just the gates. You can instantly travel between galaxies, which is hard to do. It takes a lot of energy. But the ancients have already done that. They've disappeared. They ascended into near godhood a long time ago. But as gate holder or gate owners ourselves now, we just kind of travel the stars and learn as much as we can and try to stop the Gould from conquering us. Because they found out once they left us with the pyramids, or we kicked them off our planet pretty much, now they found out there's billions of us, and they're like, oh, look, a whole new population to enslave. And they want to come and take us over. And then we started causing trouble for them and raising little armies on other planets that were under their control, and they really don't like us no more. Well, they never did like us, but they really dislike us now. They try not to let any civilization get advanced enough to get in their way, and somehow they overlooked us, assuming we were, when they abandoned us, we had all perished.
Mm.
The Tolans also had that issue. But they are more advanced than we are, and they held their own for a long time. And the Nox, they're way beyond. If the Nox ever wanted to go to war, the Gould couldn't stand up to them. The ancients couldn't stand up to them. The Asgard are still around. Well, they were still around. The little gray men, they have treaties to keep Earth safe and other things. That's another reason we didn't get hurt. Because if they're all trying to, all the advanced races try to be peaceful. There was four major races. There's the Furlings we never seen. There's the Ancients. There's the Asgard and the Nox. And they span galaxies, not just our galaxy. And they have treaties to keep us all safe, and they allow the ghoul to have some worlds, and some worlds are off limits. So they keep us in check. But of course, the ghoul are always trying to find a way around it. They have, you know, massive armies, the ghoul do. They control the galaxy. But an Asgard ship shows up and tells them they need to move along, that they're breaking a treaty. They can just, one ship can take out a whole, you know, three or four of theirs. It's just no match for them. And then the replicators, where the Asgard are so advanced, are their big enemy. They show up, attack the Asgard, and take their ships and turn them into their own stuff. And the Asgard are constantly fighting them off, which is why they haven't bothered to try to enforce too many of the treaty violations on the Gold. They don't want to fight a war on two fronts at the moment, and the Nox are just too nice to get involved. They just don't want to get involved at all. They're some of my favorite characters. There's a lot of fun stuff in the Stargate universe, and if you, it's like I said, it's on a lot of streaming services. Watch a few episodes, see if you like it. I'd recommend starting with SG-1, but if you want to start with Atlantis, I don't recommend starting with the Stargate universe, because it just drops you right in the middle of the deep end of the pool. You have no idea what's going on, and it only lasted one season. I'm going to be going through a bunch of 5e compatible rule systems here in the next few weeks, is what I plan to do. So you said you would play this?
Yeah.
Don't sound so enthusiastic.
I would give it a try, but Stargate Atlantis was
decent. I wish
they
made an Atlantis one, or an expansion, but you know, since it's a separate show, they had to get the
right. Yeah, things like this just don't, I just zone out because it's not interesting for me.
I'm a sci-fi nerd, but I'm also a fan. I'm just into all of it. Cyberpunk is about the least interesting thing to me, though. It's the one I don't really enjoy all the time. I watch the, you know, Cyberpunk show, but it's just meh. Okay, well, I'll look and see if this is on DriveThruRPG. If it is, I'll put a link, an affiliate link, in the description. It didn't cost me a fortune to buy the print version, but I just can't remember where I got it from. But like I said, if you Google it, you'll find it yourself. And if you just want the PDF, check out the drop. It might be printable on DriveThruRPG. I don't know. If it is, it'll be in the link description. Also, I need to say, if you want to try and play a game with us sometime, or me and Dakota, or any of us, reach out. Send us an email. We got the email in the link in the description as well. And we'll try to work out a time and something. Well, I need more players. I have not enough.
We don't have friends around here.
We'll do it on Roll20, but even then, I just, you know, if you listen to this, I feel like you know me better than random people I'd find on Roll20. Let me put it that way. Does that make sense? Yeah, we'll find a game. Even if it's just D&D, it could be one of the other ones we play. Just let me know what you like, and I can find people to play. Well, I can get Dakota to play anything. Beth will play almost anything. We just need more than two people. We could do it, but it's kind of dull to do just to run a game for two people. And it's awkward. It's like more people there, the less awkward it is. I don't know how that worked out, but I found that out doing it the hard way. But there will be another link in the description as well. It'll be our Linktree link. It'll take you to all our socials, our YouTube, everything there. It'll take you to our main website where you can find our other podcast, Brother Nerd's Quest, this one. Leveling Duo, it's a podcast me and Dakota do occasionally whenever a new video game comes out we really want to talk about. It won't be out every week because we don't play a new game every week. And then there'll be Horrific History and Hauntings. It's the podcast where my sister here tells me all about her, well, horrific history and haunting stories that she wants to share. Different things, sometimes true crime, a lot of times true crime. A lot of times those things all go together, actually. It is horrific if it's a true crime. But yeah, reach out, let us know. Thanks for the reviews. Thanks for using the affiliate links also. I noticed somebody else has been using them. I appreciate that. Slowly but surely buying up the PDFs that other people get that I haven't mentioned just so I can look and see what other people are interested in. That's what that link is for. Thanks. And if you want to leave a donation or a tip or whatever you want to call it, there's a link for that. But if you just feel like using the affiliate links, that's fine. That helps both of us out when you do that. If you have an app that lets you rate us, review, thank you. We'd appreciate that as well. I can't tell you exactly how to find that because every app works differently. Apple Podcasts, which I think most of you are listening on, is the easiest to do that on, and we appreciate that. We're still waiting to get enough to do a whole episode on review talk for each podcast we do. And I guess that's it. You have any final words, Beth?
No.
Alrighty. Well, thank you for listening. I've been Ramey.
And I'm Beth.
And this has been Brother Nerd's Quest. Bye-bye.